This is an Audio Wool original.
This episode of Fright Day is brought to you by Spring Hill Jack Coffee. You need great coffee. Jack delivers. Visit springhilljack.coffee.
That was one. You just breathed in all of the fluid there.
Don't do that. Whoa.
You know what that's called?
I don't know, man.
Aspiration.
I do know that.
Whoa.
Came out of nowhere.
Wow.
It is Fright Day. I'm your host, Byron. And your first year of college can be scary. It can also be a rush. Even more if you want to make the decision to join a fraternal organization. You don't need me to tell you that the initiation process, for the most part, isn't a walk in the park. But how far is too far? Find out tonight as we review Daniel Robbins' Pledge. And are you a powerful white man who enjoys the company of other powerful white men, as well as windowless stone buildings and grave robbing? I've got a secret society for you. It's the Skull and Bones in this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies. I'm joined tonight by Kelly.
Technically, they allow women in now.
And Sam.
Hey, guys.
There's a Jamie voice here, too.
Hi.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
Hi. It's so nice having somebody like her here.
Someone to eat whipped cream with.
Yeah.
Into the mic.
With sprinkles.
Great. What have you guys been up to? Anything cool?
Okay, so I actually watched a movie this week, and I've spent the last 20 minutes trying to remember what it was.
Wow.
I can't remember what it was.
Kelly.
So hopefully if you guys get through the end of yours, by that time I will remember what it was.
I guess I can talk about a...
It was on Hulu.
Good. There's a lot on there. I burned through an eerie little true crime doc series.
Ooh, what was it?
It was called Murder Mountain.
The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office is asking for the public to keep an eye out for a missing man.
Another man is mysteriously disappeared
somewhere in Humboldt County.
You could just tell that there's something going on up here.
There are flyers everywhere.
I don't think they have the slightest clue on what goes on in this county.
Trinity, Humboldt, Mendocino. This is the Emerald Triangle. Have 15,000 illegal grows up here.
It's their own law up there. It's their own country.
This is not the hippie marijuana industry anymore.
I've been shot at, beaten, kidnapped 3 times.
No, son, don't get involved with that, please.
Get the out as soon as humanly possible.
You could end up dead in a ravine.
In that area, we refer to it as Murder Mountain.
It's directed by Joshua Zeman. Sound familiar?
I know that name.
Sound familiar?
Nope.
Cropsey, Killer Legends.
Oh.
And it's not connected to the series that he did, The Killing Season, that I talked about a bit on the show, but this is his second approach to a true crime documentary series.
Humboldt.
It is Humboldt. It's the story of Garrett Rodriguez, who left home in San Diego to seek his fortune in the marijuana fields of Humboldt County, California. Within a year, he vanished, setting off a series of bloody events that still haunt the residents to this day. It's set in the backdrop of marijuana legalization. Humboldt County is full of some really interesting characters.
Characters, indeed.
This doc is the first time that a lot of these people are coming forward to talk about... I don't want to get too deep into
this. This is actually, I don't know if you were talking about it or somebody else recently. This sounds just fascinating to me. This really sounds interesting.
Yeah, on the surface, it didn't seem like anything I would really be interested in, but it sucked me in very quickly. It makes me even more worried about the time I almost ran out of gas and got lost in Humboldt County. Did I tell you about this?
Yes.
I got followed for several miles, and I finally found a gas station, and it looked like an old mom and pop shop, but it was inhabited entirely by people in their early 20s. And then it clicked. I was like, oh, I get it.
Sure.
Right.
Bunch of people coming up here to Smoke the Reefer.
Yep.
Puff the Kron.
Yep.
Bunch of Chiba Hounds.
Primarily.
Because of this series, I also learned a lot about a new serial killer couple. Very exciting. From the early 1980s, they're called the San Francisco Witch Killers. They, in the middle of their spree, got temp jobs at pot farms and scattered body parts in the fields. Maybe. I don't know if that's just rumor, but I'll know soon because I started reading a book.
What?
Called Cry for War, the story of Susan and Michael Carson by a guy named Richard D. Reynolds.
Did they end up on the Pacific Crest Trail or something?
It's quite possible. I'm not really sure, okay. But I'm very excited to learn, and I'll let you both know all about it when I do.
Okay, that's great. Hey, guess what? Guess what? I remembered the name of the movie I watched.
Well, I also saw 4 of the 6 episodes of Surviving R. Kelly, but it's a real rough watch, and I don't want to be a bummer. What did you watch?
We hate R. Kelly.
He's a piece of shit.
Real bad human. I watched A Crooked Somebody.
A Crooked Somebody.
It was 20 years ago. Only one guy would. I was out of my mind.
The line comes from a phrase the main character's father says, which is, I'd rather be an honest nobody than a crooked somebody.
Okay.
So it had Clifton Collins Jr. in it, who's one of my favorite character actors of all time, which is why I initially decided to watch it, because I went through Hulu and selected a bunch of horror movies that I haven't seen yet.
Double CJ.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, if he's in it, let's watch this one. It also had Ed Harris.
Love
which
Ed.
Was kind of fun.
Did you finish season 2 of Westworld?
No, but not because I don't want to. It's one of the few that I'm actually trying to wait to watch with Sam.
Okay.
So I'm holding off. Then Rich Summer was the main character in this, and he plays kind of this jackass, a phony psychic. He and his wife have been scamming people forever, and he is kidnapped by a gentleman, Clifton Collins Jr., who thinks that he's a real psychic and thinks he can help him escape the torture of this spirit that he thinks is haunting him. So it spirals into a really interesting story. I have to say it's much more thriller than it is horror.
It does appear that way.
That's pretty dark though.
Or you're leaving out Michael Mosley. Mason Young from Ozark.
Yeah.
Well, you guys don't do Ozark.
No, we don't do Ozark, and his part was a lot smaller too.
Kelly started Ozark.
Oh yeah, I did the first 3 episodes actually.
How'd you stop?
Well, it's really depressing.
Okay, it's dark.
Oh God. I was expecting it to be funny, and it's like
why after everything that everyone has said, would you expect it to be
well,
funny.
I guess all I've heard is that it has Jason Bateman. That's all I've really paid attention to. And I'm like, oh, this will be witty and fun.
Much more like The Gift Bateman.
It's way more grim than The Gift, even, I would
say.
That's true. The family stuff and the...
You haven't even finished the first season. It is...
Anyhow, Crooked Somebody. It's kind of a fun one. Check it out on Hulu.
Did you guys see that Choose Your Own Adventure is suing Netflix for Bandersnatch?
I did see that.
It's kind of fun, really.
Is that possible?
Yes. Well, evidently Netflix actually used the Choose Your Own Adventure logo in some of their promo material.
Okay.
Early promo material.
Well, that's a bummer. I've heard a lot of backlash, too. A lot of praise when it came out, and now all of a sudden people are like, why Bandersnatch is the worst episode of Black Mirror. And I'm just like, this is ridiculous.
What about the one where they're the people on the bikes?
Is that the Social Credit
one? I liked that one. I thought that was kind of fun. No, the Social Credit one was the different one. But
that one was bad too, though.
There's a couple. Sam, what have you been up to?
I watched that Crooked Whatever with Kelly.
Sure.
And I actually went to, not horror in the slightest, but I went to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
And I've heard really, really good things.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I don't want to talk about it too much because, you know, we're a horror podcast.
Save it for your podcast.
Yes.
Coming soon.
It'll have a name too.
And you spent the week trying to make some new friends, didn't you?
I don't know. There was a lot of begging and crying and them calling me a fat guy. And then there was more crying on the front step.
Sounds a lot like you were trying to join the Skull and Bones.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was trying.
Do you think he's got what it takes?
Unquestionably not.
In this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
But that's a compliment.
Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Oh, hi.
What do you got for us?
Oh, am I supposed to talk about something tonight?
All right. So?
Were you sworn to secrecy?
I was sworn to secrecy. They actually accept women now, and even though I never went to an Ivy League, let alone Yale, I got in. And so now I promised I wouldn't give my report tonight.
Okay. Well.
But I got this really, really cool nickname that I also can't tell you, and I have this really cool red robe. And $15,000.
You're looking at us like, huh? What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Well, I don't like
jelly.
It.
It's a bathrobe, and those are Canadian dollars. So
Canadian dollars are still pretty good. Not bad. Not talking about pesos here. Like, okay, that's just an exchange rate joke. That is not racial. That
Hey, let's move currency.
That is mathematical.
Developing currencies out of this.
I was watching a series of YouTube videos trying to get ready for this, and one of them said, Skull and Bones, the most secret society you've never heard of. And I got to thinking, maybe there are people that don't know what Skull and Bones is, so I should probably start by telling people what Skull and Bones is. It's a fraternal organization only for seniors at Yale, founded in 1832 by William Huntington Russell and Alfonso Taft. The reason it was originally founded is Russell failed to secure an invitation to the prestigious Phi Beta Kappa Honor Society on campus, so he decided to throw a temper tantrum and start his own club.
Which could have very well turned into something like Van Wilder or Old School, but for young fellows.
Totally went a different direction. Sure, and the reason it did is when he came back and attempted to join Phi Beta Kappa, he was returning from a year abroad where he'd studied in Germany. Okay? Though people dance around this quite a bit, lots of evidence indicates that there is a direct link from the Bavarian Illuminati to Skull and Bones because it was right around the time that the Bavarian Illuminati was being forbidden, all right?
Which, of course, is episode 119, The Dark Tapes.
Oh. So this is actually an excerpt pulled from a group of people that broke into the Skull and Bones headquarters earlier, I think 1970s. It says, Bones is a chapter of a core of a German university. It should properly be called the Skull and Bones chapter. General Russell, I just talked about its founder, was in Germany before his senior year and formed a warm friendship with a leading member of a German society. The meaning of the permanent number 322 in all Bones literature is it was founded in 32 as the second chapter of the German society. But the Bonesman has a pleasing fiction that his fraternity is a descendant of an old Greek patriot society founded by Demosthenes, who died in 322 BC. Chances are the whole Greek connection is just made up, and it really does have to do with the German connection, because there's a ton of German writing inside their headquarters. Lots of German connections, but whatever it is, that has clearly been helpful in fueling lots of conspiracy theories around the deep, dark intentions of the Skull and Bones.
But isn't it part of the alleged connection to Greek? Potentially not that they are descended from that, but that they're inspired by the conflict at that time in Greece, which ended in the dissolving of democracy and the installation of rule by the wealthy elite in Greece. And that's,
you know, okay, yeah. Nerd.
Come on, what a dork. Shut up, dude.
I am just puking out something I saw in one of your videos.
Okay, no, that actually, I missed that in the video. I figured that was because you were a history major and you're smart. No, I think that's great. I think that's awesome. But let's talk a little bit about where William Huntington Russell came from, because a lot of what's creepy and weird about the Skull and Bones Society, or the Skull and Bones chapter, if you wish, is the power of the people who have belonged to it over the years. William Huntington Russell, one of the founders himself, has two fairly different bios floating around on the internets. One describes him as a young man whose father died right before he entered Yale, thus making him pretty financially strained, dealing with a ton of family pressure, etc. The other bio describes him as heir to a family fortune that was earned largely through drug dealing, opium, to be exact. So
sounds a lot like modern fraternities.
It does, doesn't it? It's really interesting.
Well, that, I assume that was the date rape drug of choice in 1830s on Yale's campus.
We're talking more about like international opium trade. My conclusion based on the research I did is that it's probably a little bit of both. I think it was actually his cousin who started this shipping business that did indeed make a fortune on the opium trade. He was affiliated with it later in life, though he really didn't have a ton of money when he was younger, it looks like. And he was just kind of a sore loser and wanted to be part of a fancy club, so he started one. Now, Alfonso Taft, another man who didn't have a ton of money at the time, but went on to be a pretty important political powerhouse. He became Attorney General and Secretary of State under President Ulysses Grant. Super sad fact, he had three children die in infancy, including two, both named after him, one who died in 1951 and the other in 1952, respectively. Now, horrible, tragic situation, but can you imagine naming a child after yourself, it passes away as a baby, and then deciding to name the next child the same thing?
I mean, a lot of parents do that with goldfish and cats.
And it passed away again.
Awful.
One of his children did survive, however, and this was William Howard Taft, who became the only person in the history of our country to be both Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and President. Now, that may sound like another one of Sam's nerdy facts, unless you think about it broadly, which is our government's supposed to be made up of three branches, and they're supposed to be independent. The idea that one person occupied the highest power in both the executive and the judicial branch is pretty creepy and weird.
Yeah.
That shouldn't have happened. Luckily, it hasn't happened since. Who knows? Maybe Trump will be the first. Interesting side note on William's death. This is kind of grim, but in May 1885, Russell saw some boys throwing stones at birds in the park in New Haven, Connecticut. Russell sought to protect the birds from the boys. The activity was too much for him, and he fell unconscious from a fatal rupture of a blood vessel and died.
That sounds like it was written. I mean, not that Wikipedia allows just anyone to edit the entries, but that sounds like it was written by a fellow boner.
I mean, you're probably right.
Well, and his wife was Mary E. Hubbard. Elrond?
Do you think? I didn't look it up. You should see. Do some genealogy research, Byron.
Someone do it. I mean, multiple secret societies? I mean, one is a not so secret. But.
One is even dumber than Skull and Bones, if you can imagine it. Okay, now the name Skull and Bones itself has rather unclear origins. However, the best explanation I have found is as follows. Word alert. Sam, do you know what ossuary means?
Yeah, ossuary is a reliquary for bones.
Wait, what's a reliquary?
Yeah, God damn you. What do you mean by reliquary?
It's an alcove or nook, typically, where a repository for bones of the deceased.
Shut up.
The way that we're using it tonight, it's actually an ancient way of burying the dead, which was used specifically by the Knights Templar. Upcoming episode for sure, Byron. Needs to happen soon.
Down, yeah.
Okay. Here's the process. You take a body, bury it in a shallow grave in dirt, wait until all has decomposed except the bones. Then you take the bones out and you put them in a specific arrangement in a box, an ossuary. Finish it by putting the two thigh bones at the top, crossed with the skull on the very top. Thus, Skull and Bones.
Would you look at that?
The connection to the Knights Templar again. Now we've got a connection to the Illuminati and a connection to the Knights Templar. Boy, oh boy, Skull and Bones is nothing but fun. Sam, did you uncover any connection to the Elrond?
No, I didn't, but an ossuary is a container or room in which the bones of dead people are placed.
Yes, I just said arrange it in a box, an ossuary.
I'm saying my definition was better.
You're okay. Where do these skull and boners meet? They meet in the tomb, which is actually what they call it. It's this super creepy building on campus. No windows. It's a brownstone. The size was doubled using funds from the Russell Trust that was set up by the founder. So when he started getting older and put a bunch of money in savings in a trust that's been added to since, and that's what the organization runs on. They have added on twice to the building, I think. So now it's fairly large. Still no windows. They hired architect Alexander Jackson Davis, who designed a clubhouse built out of brownstone and out of request in an Egyptian revival style. They think that this was a statement. It was there to stay. Every building around it was Georgian brick, but they used brownstone, however, in an Egyptian style.
My guess is we watched a walk-around video that someone had taken. The stones are irregular in size and asymmetrically placed, but they all come together in a really cool pattern.
Yeah. There were specific Egyptian temples that inspired the clubhouse design. The Temple of Thebes at Cornell and the Temple of Karnak. When the Bones Tomb originally opened, it was just a third of the size that it is today. Like I said, both of those add-ons were made using the funds that they had.
And of course, images of this headquarters will be in the show notes of this episode of Friday.com.
Absolutely. There will be lots of resources in the show notes of this episode because we've got a lot of fun articles that have been written about this society over the years. So this next fact is probably going to surprise you guys a little bit. When the alumni originally put up money for the tomb to be built, there were a couple of conditions, and one of those conditions was they would never allow alcohol inside the building. I guess specifically liquor. I think they can have beer, but they're not allowed to have liquor inside. This was so the club could emphasize learning about each other rather than just drinking and revelry.
So having knowledge of one another.
But the prohibition on liquor in the building is apparently still in force today. Parlor 322 is on the second floor, and it's apparently the Sanctum Sanctorum, where the rites and rituals are conducted. Again, the significance of 322 is nebulous, but I'm definitely going with the German chapter found in 32, the second chapter of this same German society. Supposedly some pretty mysterious things inside the building, though. You guys want to hear about some of them?
Absolutely.
The skull and at least one leg bone of Geronimo. So let's back up a step. This is another horrific story about the treatment of Native peoples by the American government. Geronimo, who was actually named Gueyathle, I'm probably putting the wrong emphasis.
They're
going
to call you the butcher this year.
Yeah, I know. It's fine. I'm at least trying to say his right name rather than just calling him Geronimo, which is what we've called him, which is really stupid. He strongly resisted white settlers. He fought against both U.S. and Mexican armies for almost 30 years. In 1886, he had only 35 men left, ended up surrendering to General Nelson A. Miles. They were right near the border between New Mexico and Arizona. The rest of his life, which was 23 more years, he lived as a prisoner of war at Fort Sill, eventually died of pneumonia, and was buried there.
And Nelson Miles went on to die with Custer.
Yeah, well, anyhow. Fast forward 9 years, Prescott Bush... If that name sounds familiar, it should, because it was H.W.'s father Papa. And G.W.'s...
Granddad.
G-pop. Okay? So, Prescott...
We know how to talk?
Prescott...
What's that?
We have words.
Prescott Bush, along with five other boners, was serving as a volunteer at Fort Sill during World War One. For some reason, they decided it was a great idea to dig up Geronimo Goyathle's grave... and steal his skull, at least one leg bone, possibly two leg bones, and part of his saddle, and take them back to the clubhouse. Because he was...
His saddle? He's buried with his... Like...
Yeah, apparently parts of his horse, yeah. He was, indeed, a member of Skull and Bones. This seems really wild, but historians actually say it's one of the more likely stories surrounding the S&Bs, especially because a 1918 ledger from the society was sent to the former San Carlos Apache chairman, Ned Anderson. You see, Goyathle was an Apache. You know, his descendants obviously have some interest in what's going on here. In 1986, the former chairman, Ned Anderson, got this ledger, and it specified that the S&Bs had the skull. So he went and met with some of the members. They denied it, but then they offered him a glass case that contained a teeny tiny skull that looked like a child's skull. And he was like, no.
It's not the right
one. Just, this is a thing we do. You're our guest. Here you go.
Here's a skull, maybe a baby skull.
Take
have
it
a
and
blast.
Live it and go in peace.
Oh, we have a bunch of these.
Oh, God. So in 2006, a second piece of evidence supporting the reality of this theft was found. The letter, also written in the year the grave robbing supposedly took place. The skull of the worthy Geronimo the Terrible, exhumed from its tomb at Fort Sill by your club, is now safe inside the tomb and boned together with his well-worn femurs, bit, and saddle horn.
So they liked Geronimo.
Yeah, they thought he was kick-ass, but not kick-ass to leave his grave alone.
Well,
they just thought nobody deserved these important historical artifacts and relics more than they did because they were, you know...
Just super fancy.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that's pretty shitty about it is his remains were buried at his place of death rather than his place of birth. And for some weird reason, about 10 years after this happened, the military poured cement over his gravesite and then put a new stone up on it rather than the wooden one that had been there previously. It's obviously possible to exhume the grave, but it's really hard. On the 100th anniversary of his death in 2009, 20 of his descendants decided to sue to have their ancestors' remains removed from the place of his death and moved to his birthplace, New Mexico. Makes a lot of sense. Because it's believed by at least some that part of his remains are indeed inside the Tomb of the Skull and Bones on Yale's campus, Skull and Bones were included in the lawsuit. And like other horrific injustices, the lawsuit was dismissed in 2010. The judge ruled regarding the portion of the suit that involved the grave disturbance. The objection to the 1918 grave robbing was invalid because the law they cited was violated only pertained to the disturbance of Native American cultural items excavated or discovered after 1990. How dumb is that? Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, so I couldn't find any other update other than notes from 2010 saying that the Apache people would continue the suit. If anyone knows anything, please let me know because I actually really tried to find something on this. I'd love to know where it stands now. But anyhow, so that's about Geronimo's bones inside the tomb. One woman who was shown the inside of the tomb one night by a loose-lipped boner who wanted to impress her. This is kind of disappointing and it makes it seem a lot less cool, guys. So brace yourself.
It's a frat.
Yeah, there's one room that has license plates all over it.
No.
Apparently,
no.
Yeah, I know, right? Isn't that disappointing? Yeah. So apparently one of their charges.
Next to the Scarface poster?
Right, I know, right? And two or three giant bongs. Yeah. So
empty top shelf vodka bottles.
No liquor. No liquor?
Just empty bottles, I said.
Well, maybe they do bring the empty ones in. Apparently, it's one of the charges of all members to steal any license plate that has the number 322 on it.
Oh, well.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Bring them for safekeeping in the room of license plates.
They're thieves also.
Yeah.
Do you feel it? That chill? The cold that seeps into your marrow and leaves a trail of invisible frost along your spine? You left that door open, didn't you? Did you? The daylight hours are short now, and the night endless and hungry. The solstice has yet to come. Or has it passed? Wasn't there a porch light on at the house across the street? A warm, sepia spot of hope in the emptiness? Wasn't there a house across the street? Is this how it all ends? In mindless, black cold? Now there is only ice, void, and piping hot Spring-Heel Jack coffee. As you sip from your mug, there is warmth. Maybe Spring-Heel Jack can turn this around, this infernal cold. Then again, it's only sustainably sourced artisanal coffee from a passionate family-crafted roaster. It's only coffee. Is it only coffee? It's warm and delicious, and for a moment you thaw as well. You watch out your window through the frosted pane, where now there is nothing. Nothing but you and Spring-Heel Jack. Now available on Amazon Prime and at Spring-Heeled, that's Spring-Heeled, jack.coffee.
Another skull they supposedly have is Pancho Villa's skull. Rumor is that they bought it for $25,000 in 1926, which was right after it was stolen from his grave. They've denied this. Some people say that they wouldn't have had the money to buy it. Who knows? But it has been confirmed by some off-record members that they do indeed have his cabeza.
What?
That's Jesus. Another crappy thing. Obviously, these people are... I don't know that you could get a more clear example of cultural appropriation than a bunch of rich white guys stealing minorities'
bones,
yeah. Right? Pretty gross. You know, let's just keep with the disgusting line here. They are supposed to have a set of Hitler's silverware.
Oh.
Not sure why, but there's that. And then there's also a full skeleton involved in some of their rituals in some way called Madame Pompadour. Now, Sam... Apparently, the bonesmen believe that this is the skeleton of Madame de Pompadour. Do you have any idea who the hell Madame de Pompadour is?
She was the originator of the Pompadour hairstyle.
Okay, other than that, did you just make that up?
Yes, of course I just made that up.
I was
well, you know a lot of stuff.
They just dance. I just imagine it's like the Silly Symphonies. Skeleton's just going...
Skeleton dance?
Like the floppy arms.
Madame de Pompadour was a member of the French court... the official chief mistress of Louis XV for a period of 6 years. Now, this happened in France in the 1750s. There are some nebulous ties between her and supposedly some of the secret societies of the time. That's probably some of the connection with the bones. Now, why in the world they would have her full skeleton? I have no idea. Why she would be so important a figure to them? Rather unclear. But we will have some photos from inside in the show notes of this episode at frightday.com. Mm-hmm. In the 1980s, there was supposedly an infiltration that showed a lot of pretty extremely homoerotic stuff inside, which again, no problem. But these guys, I don't think most of them were gay. In fact, they didn't officially allow gay members until I think 1993, I want to say.
So I think the real obvious speculation here, like beyond speculation, this is fact. We'll just put this out there as fact. Necrophilia.
Yeah, actually, that has been suggested as well.
Oh.
Now that we know a little bit about what the actual building looks like on the inside, what these weirdos are going in to see, let's talk about what they do when they're in there. Well, unfortunately, we don't know everything they do, but we do know some pieces. They've been assembled over years of nosy folks like myself, but much more professional, I suppose.
You think Alex Jones ever tried?
I don't know. We're not talking about him until I do my background report on what a pile of poop he is.
We should really.
Yeah, I hates the man, so I'm happy to do an episode on what a pile of shit he is.
Yeah, I wonder if he would be able to get into a secret society that had, you know, like doors or a fence that you
could
just stumble into from the freeway.
He falls into groves for the most part.
Yeah.
So you've talked a little bit about some of the things that are inside of this building. What does it look like inside, period?
Well, Unfortunately, I have not been there. I really want to go, but I don't think they're going to let me in.
Sam's trying to book a trip over there now, but it looks like...
Yeah, I'm...
Well, but you can't even stand in front of
Patreon.com. /Friday.
Yeah.
But well, like there's literally cool. a sign that says you can't stand.
No standing.
All right.
It's like a no parking sign, except it's in the middle of the sidewalk. Well, if and you, it's red.
Here's what's very, very difficult. We have conflicting ideas about what's inside. In the 1980s, there were supposedly some pictures taken from a break-in. They look very different than the more popular photos that are out there from, I believe these are from more like the 50s. So photos that we have in the show notes of this episode look almost like, I would say, Gaston's hunting lodge.
Okay.
Okay.
Gaston and his buddies.
Yeah. So I can just see LeFou hanging from a pair of those antlers, you know? They've got it's
lusting for Gaston.
Yep.
Really upset.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Lots of antlers hanging on the wall, cattle skulls as well, pictures of famous members.
Some beautiful hardwood furniture.
Big ass library table, carvings. Lots of bookshelves.
So much mahogany.
Yeah, lots of mahogany.
Just decadent.
Oddly opulent. Numbered rooms with almost look like from a kidnapping ransom note with, you know, differently sized letters. It is really, really big. People who have looked at the 1980s photos, which I'm still trying to track down and hope to have by next week's episode, it's described as homoerotic, even necroerotic. Human skulls and bones rather than the antlered deer. More German in decor, I guess.
So it's like if Rammstein were a group of interior decorators instead of industrial museums.
That also invited Heinrich Himmler.
Yeah, sure. I am really, really hoping that somebody at least knows where these 1980s break-in photos are, because this seems like something I should be able to find. I couldn't even dig them up on Reddit, which was very disappointing.
Well, check 4chan then.
Yeah.
It's a logical next step.
I don't do that.
I mean, that's a logical first step.
Ooh.
That's just not where I go ever. But if you look at the bird's eye view of the building, it's big. Like, it really is quite big. Very common reports are that there are coffins of some sort in there, which we will get into next week when we talk about the ritual and the way those coffins are used.
Whoa. Next week?
Well, I mean, Skull and Bones can't be contained to one episode.
Are you kidding me?
We got a whole lot of D-bags in there to talk about. Whole lot of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait.
And hopefully I will have some of those great modern pictures to talk about next week as well. But we need to talk about who's a part of it, what they're doing now, what are they doing to the world around us, what conspiracies are afoot, and what exactly those super weird rituals look like behind those padlocked giant doors. Also, Sam's going to be reporting live from the tomb next week.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
It will be recorded and carried out, but it's not going to be live.
He's going back to college undercover.
We're doing a Never Been Kissed.
We are doing. It's Sam's just Drew Barrymore.
It's just going to be me going, oh, guys, they didn't let me in again.
It's going to be sad. Well, I can't wait. Thank you so much for that report, Kelly.
You betcha. Thank you, guys.
It's a great one, Kel.
What a lot of fun.
This was a really good idea, Byron. I feel stupid that I didn't think of it. It was such a good idea.
Oh. I enjoy thoroughly the fact that you're talking about something that we can make fun of unlimitedly and not feel bad about it.
Oh, and we're not done yet.
Yeah.
We got a couple more frat boys to talk about.
Oh, God, yeah.
What do you say we do that right now?
Absolutely.
And review Pledge.
Hope you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
Pledge is a 2018 horror thriller directed by a gentleman named Daniel Robbins, written by Zach Wiener. Sam, could you share a little bit about this?
A group of college freshmen pledge an exclusive fraternity, but soon realize there's more at stake than they could ever have imagined.
That was a good one, Sam.
Yeah, so here, Byron, here you go, buddy. Wanted to give you this.
What is that?
This is your pin.
Oh, don't. That's bottle cap, and we'll talk about that later on in the movie.
No, I'm tapping you.
Oh, I thought
for my fraternity.
I thought we were doing this thing with the elbows. We're going to talk.
Oh, no. That's your pledge pin.
Oh, good.
He just offered you a pledge pin to join my fraternity.
We've got a lot of explaining to do. Superbad meets Hostel. And in order to talk further about this, I think we need to develop our Superbad gang of folk. We have Justin, David, and Ethan, a bunch of losers, and they want to join a fraternity. They're not having much luck.
Yeah.
Because why? Too hot.
Well,
too
yeah.
smart.
Hot, hot, hot.
Really good conversationalists.
Yeah.
Well, and what's interesting is only one of them seems to really care that much.
Yeah, we're talking about Zach Wiener plays David, and he's actually the writer of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's dragging
I didn't know that.
Yeah. His buddies to and from various frat parties, mm-hmm. hoping that on pledge day they get invited to join a fraternity, and they just don't.
They seem pretty content with maybe just being normal people.
And yeah, yep. drinking and playing Xbox, I think specifically is what they say.
Yeah. But he is not going to give it up.
That's college, right?
Which he's not giving up, though.
Absolutely not. In this effort to do what he can to make it into a fraternity, he accepts an invite to not even a frat house. They're a social club.
A party.
Uh-huh, in the middle of nowhere. And a lovely building. Does have windows, though.
Well, yes.
Wild night at the party for the nerds.
The buildings seem to be slightly removed from all of the other, like, fraternity row stuff, though, yeah?
Oh, yeah, it's a bit remote.
I think they mentioned it's 10 miles from town.
I heard 2, but I could be mistaken.
They walked. I feel like if it was 10...
It doesn't matter. Miles away.
Anything could happen that far away.
And a lot does.
Sure does.
Kelly, what are your thoughts on this thing?
Well, I'm a nerd, and I never really loved the idea of frats and sororities to begin with. Like normal ones, even.
Like the one in the movie.
I also watched this movie
aren't they?
Midstream with some pretty in-depth research on Skull and Bones, which is just not doing much to endear fraternities or secret groups to me in any way, shape, or form. My first reaction at the beginning of this movie was, why do these guys care so much?
Even the behavior that they're shown from the normal fraternities, response they're getting.
Right, like, don't subject yourself to this crap.
I love that moment where he's like, you guys are just weird.
Yeah.
And they are weird, let's be honest.
I mean, at one point they solicit constructive criticism from one of the frats that's denying them.
It was very cringy for me. I'm like, this is not good. You should not be doing this. Mm-mm. You should just listen to the other friends who are telling you that it doesn't matter.
Sam, was this what it was like when you joined the fraternity?
I actually did pledge a frat for my first semester of college just because I liked to drink and go to parties. And then it got to this part where, you know, it got real, it got cringy.
Yeah.
I said, sorry, gentlemen, I believe that this is where we are. We'll part ways. I wish you well in all of your endeavors. And you, Sigma Chi, may you always rest.
I would really like you to say exactly what you actually said.
Fuck you guys. If you get between me and the door, I'll kill every last motherfucking one of you.
All right. Well, that was wildly different, but probably accurate.
What he said. Yeah.
Wow.
Especially Sam from those days. That's probably pretty close.
But this fraternity, they're not looking for many members.
Small group.
Somewhere around 10. No more.
No less.
The people they got to fill out this cast. This is what makes the movie for me. I do want to comment on Max's hair, played by Aaron Dalla Vila. It's fun. Really wild character, that guy. Lots of energy.
Kind of the leader of
real
the...
coked out. Just seemed massively coked out the whole time. Uncomfortable to watch, even.
And he's got two henchmen type fellas with him.
Yeah.
What are the names?
I don't know, but the one with the glasses reminded me of that creepy guy in Mad Max.
Well, he didn't have glasses on all the time. He did once.
Right, but then he reminded me of Mad Max, and then it was stuck for the rest of the...
Well, that's fun. His name is Cameron Cowperthwaite. Played a guy named Ricky. Film VIP in this. I thought his performance was incredible. It reminded me a lot of Funny Games.
Yes.
Same page. And this is why we need to start a frat. He did an amazing job at being the good guy out of the bad guys, but at the same time doing really awful things.
Yeah.
And it's so confusing emotionally. It was good.
His performance specifically, like you mentioned, it showed how, a little bit how, in a very exaggerated way, these organizations work. I mean, I'm talking about real world frats here. They have to coax you along and mix in some of the sweet with the sour, mm-hmm. or otherwise, no matter how stupid you are, you would just leave.
Because these guys stick around for a while, even after the awfulness starts.
So they need a little bit of the good cop, bad cop, even if the good cop is actually psychotic cop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like branding or forced feedings or whippings and chokings. And
yeah. Honestly, anybody that didn't jump and run after that situation.
So this film is torture porn.
Yeah, it sure is. It turns very quickly into Hostel. They're invited there by a girl, which is another reason I pointed out Hostel.
She saw these guys get rejected from their umpteenth frat and immediately makes a cell phone call. You know, they're invited.
I thought that was really interesting. It was a heavy nod, but it's been long enough. It's time for a Hostel. I guess, are we bringing this back?
Yeah.
Or is this a second wave of torture porn?
Hostel wasn't this much fun, though.
No, and that's the thing that sets this whole thing apart, is the energy, the performances, and the fact that this movie, it knows what it is, and it embraces it entirely.
Other than the obvious surface, I guess, methods that it uses to address campus violence and sexual violence generally, I guess, and objectification of women, which is done in a very cartoonish way, almost. This movie is just about one set piece of gore and torture leading to the next.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the ladies.
Yeah. So I understand that the men involved in this fraternity are going to treat women pretty poorly, but I wasn't a huge fan of the way that women were portrayed in the movie. Mm-hmm. Pretty stupid, pretty helpless.
They seem like they had been trapped in a cycle.
Well, I don't know. It wasn't the point. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that every movie needs to have super three-dimensional female characters to be a decent movie. But I guess
as long as the male characters are fully fleshed out, I agree.
From my perspective, I would rather have had them just leave the women out of the movie entirely than have them involved in the degree that they were involved.
You're right. It wasn't necessary. Well, I mean, I guess they were lured in by sexuality, but they didn't need to be.
Yeah, and
they did bring them in and they didn't use them.
It was a honey trap. I mean, that's how those organizations operate. That's one of the things that they use to draw new members is one of the many things that 18, 19-year-old guys are interested in.
I think that there were a lot of things that could have been done better in terms of the female characters. And I guess it just, for me, would have been less annoying if it would have been left out entirely.
Completely understandable.
There were a couple of the characters in the movie that I actually enjoyed and felt really sad as things continued to go horribly wrong for them.
Yeah. Talking about Man Bun?
Yeah. What's strange is he actually looked like a kid that I knew my freshman year in college. He reminded me of this guy that I knew, so that could have had something to do with me feeling really extra sad for him. But he also just seemed more helpless than the rest of them.
He's definitely more innocent, and he didn't deserve what happened to him.
Right.
I'm reading about it now, a historical torture method.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yep. It seemed real medieval.
It's the 1700s, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it involves a rat in a bucket and a torch.
That one was...
Yeah, so David could have died in the beginning and I wouldn't have cared at all. Yeah, I felt really bad for Justin and Ethan, primarily because these were two guys that obviously, I mean, they made a bad choice to entertain their friend David's interest, but they didn't deserve what
they felt.
Did David
ever apologize?
No, he was a jerk face.
Wow.
I guess the thing that maybe the only feels I got from this movie other than fun and cringe was I felt bad for Justin and Ethan because they very clearly would have been, like we said, happy drinking beer and playing Xbox through college.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, might have had a little rough go of it socially, but would have been had fantastic lives after college.
I didn't really go into what the director has done before because it seems like he hasn't really done too much. But I gotta say, I'm looking forward to seeing what this guy does next. He did a film called Uncaged.
Nick Cage?
No, it is.
Biopic?
No, it's not.
Hi, this is Jack. If you find this, you might want to stop watching now.
Promise me something, Jack.
Repeat after me.
When I'm 18.
When I'm 18.
If I feel sick.
If I feel sick.
I won't be afraid.
I won't be afraid.
Authorities speculate a rogue black bear may be responsible for the attack, and authorities are urging all residents to remain vigilant while carrying out their daily activities.
It's about a sleepwalking teenager who straps a camera to himself only to discover a sinister family secret. Seems like a werewolf found footage kind of thing, right?
Oh.
But I don't know. I didn't watch the trailer. It doesn't appear to be found footage, but I would hope that it would have elements of that.
Sounds really fun.
Uncaged. Did we watch that?
No, we watched a different...
The
Afflicted. Found footage. Afflicted is what we watched, right. Which is a vampire found footage movie.
Right. right.
Remember that thing?
It's really fun.
But yeah, I don't want to give away too much more of this movie.
There's some really fun twists, guys.
And this is the kind of film that I think I needed. Last week we watched a ghost movie that made me feel like I'd seen it a million times. This, it's welcome, I guess. I needed some sort of film that made me feel like I wasn't trying to solve a puzzle. I really dug it. I thought the performances were incredible on both our protagonists and antagonists, and I can't really think of anything too critical about it. And for that reason, I feel like I have to give it a 6.9
Ooh.
Shots of tequila.
I thought this was fun. I'm really glad it was a movie that Sam and Byron thoroughly enjoyed. And it really was fairly inspirational for my research on how awful Skull and Bones are. It really played in well with that. I'm going to say I liked the ending, even though we can't talk about it. I'm going to say that was actually one of my favorite parts of the movie. As you guys know, I'm a sucker for a good ending. I give this movie 6.1 Hungry Rats.
Oh. I loved Pledge. It was a mean little film that somehow managed to be a little tongue-in-cheek and a bit self-aware. The gore was great. It was pretty vicious, and it was a palate cleanser that I needed. I just needed something really unpleasant.
Everything you just said was so disturbing. Jesus.
Pledge did that.
You have to sit next to him.
The acting was fantastic. The writing was as good as it needed to be. It was fun. There were some really cool shots. They made good use of the interior location that they had, and there were some super claustrophobic, really affecting heebie-jeebie type shots that... And not giving away any more of those. But yeah, I really love this film. I'm going to give Pledge 7.2 Red Hot Branding Irons.
And those are our thoughts on Pledge, which is available now on VOD. Why don't you watch it? And when you do watch it, or if you have, let us know your thoughts. Tweet us at Fright Day on Twitter, DM us on Instagram and like our pics at Fright Day as well. You can leave a comment below the show notes of this episode at FrightDay.com. You can email us, contact at FrightDay.com, or I'd like to have a conversation about this, of course, in our Facebook group, Facebook.com/group/FrightDay. That's where all the cool folks are hanging out.
And us.
Yeah.
And us as well. If you like this show and want to help us make it even better, grab something spooky at shop.frightday.com. Kelly, what do you want them to buy?
Well, I would say buy the Nessie sweatshirt, but don't buy all of them because I still haven't gotten mine.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Obviously, all of the Captain Kelly's gear. I would buy a patch. Cool. I would buy a pin.
Mm-hmm.
I would buy a shirt. I would buy a string board kit.
Okay. I might just throw those in for free because you guys are so great. Continuing that on from last week.
Yeah. Wow.
Man, why not?
Wow.
Also,
he's gone crazy.
Large patient folks, the Nessie hoodie is in the process of being restocked. And you also may have a Nessie way to carry your things pretty soon.
What?
Here. All right, relax.
You didn't tell me this?
Okay, calm down, please.
What?
And also,
you talking about a Nessie stash sack?
Exactly. We also have those grinders. We're going to have grinders.
Whoa.
Come on now. What is this, a frat?
Oh my God, I'm so excited. You Nessie bags, for real?
We have that black and white classic Fright Day shirt also. I don't mention that enough. It's beautiful and simple, and you should get it on your body. We're going to be done here in a second. And Kelly, you have to lay next to this guy.
Yeah.
I think that Dean pin would probably do wonders for your social life also if you wanted to pick up one of those.
Just might help. We're about to shut up, but our voices continue over at patreon.com/frightday. When you support us on Patreon, you get access to a lot of stuff. Bonus episodes of Captain Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, Byron Serial Corner, The Writer's Room, which is a roundtable conversation with the writers at Frightday.com. And we've been doing those behind the screams things.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly's reading a very long tale.
Oh, it's so long. It was longer than we anticipated.
So we're going to be releasing
it. It's going to be great.
I anticipated it was going to be super long.
In chapters, which is going to be great. It's about the Wendigo.
The Wendigo.
Sure, whatever. Lots of bonus stuff, more than you could ever want.
If you're like a normal, sane person.
Hmm?
And you'll be helping us step closer and closer to this being more and more of a thing that we can do more often.
More and more.
A good amount of you guys are already supporting us on Patreon.
Thank you.
Your support really does mean a lot to us.
Yes.
Patreon.com/FrightDay. But most helpful of all, you can leave us a review on iTunes. That's the best way to get us inside of ears and up of those charts.
I just wanted to say that with your help from Patreon, we were able to contribute $250 between your money and our money to Chris Lamartina's WNUF as yet untitled sequel movie, which we feel like is a really important thing for the horror film community in general, and something I think hopefully most of you would support. I think it was a good thing to do, and it's something that we couldn't have done without you, but we all got together.
Hold on, does this mean I get to have a part in it now?
Well,
it does
not. I mean, it means that we all get to maybe have our image in the film, but
I get to pick my photo, right?
Anyway, we're able to do really some cool things that we wouldn't otherwise be able to do because you guys support us so generously, and we're just so lucky to have you.
Mm-hmm. And I do hope you guys enjoyed that conversation Sam had with Chris Lamartina. Also, keep in mind that the GoFundMe is entering its final days.
A couple weeks left when this airs.
So GoFundMe.com/WNUF-Halloween-sequel. Go support a really, really good project. You're not going to regret it. Oh, guys, I don't know what we're doing next week, but I guarantee you it's going to be a spooky film.
And an episode of a podcast.
Absolutely.
Yep, both of those things.
So when are we going to do that R. Kelly episode?
I'm not doing an R. Kelly episode. Debbie Downer, he's a pile of shit. Everybody stay away from him.
Well, we don't need to talk about this before bed. Kelly, where are you going to be until next week?
I'm going to be digging into piles of skulls and bones.
Okay, and online?
Oh, right. Yeah. I'll be at Kelly Frightday on Twitter, or you can email me, kelly@frightday.com.
I'm at Sam Frightday. Email me, sam@frightday.com. Instagram, sam_MiloDragovich.
And I'm at Byron McCoy on Twitter and Instagram. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. And until next Frightday, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam.
Oh, baby's awake.
I got her.
Been listening to an Audio Wool original produced by Byron McCoy. Theme music provided by Cemeteries. For more programs like this, visit audiowool.co.